Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and thanks for listening to the Burke Allen Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're broadcasting live from sunny Boca Raton, Florida today, and our number to call is 718-506-1944, 718-506-1944. Our guest today is Nicholas Turketel. He's the co-author of Seeing by Moonlight. It's a new historical thriller that's set in two completely different times, in the 40s and again in the 90s. It has a very timely topic now, because it deals with rocketry at the beginning of the space program during World War II with folks like Wernher von Braun. And in the last week, if you're listening to the show live, there have been a couple of private space mishaps, and we want to get Nicholas's thought on that, along with the writing process for the book Seeing by Moonlight. So welcome to the Burke Allen Show today. Our special guest, the co-author, along with M.F. Thomas, of Seeing by Moonlight, Nicholas Turketel. Nicholas, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you for having me, Burke.
You bet. We know you rolled out early in Los Angeles today. We appreciate that. So it's a fantastic book. It's a great page-turner. And if you would, set it up for folks. If someone says to you, geez, you co-wrote this new book, Seeing by Moonlight, what's it all about? What would you say?
All right. Well, you know, we start with a car salesman in Arizona, pretty ordinary guy. He's got ordinary dreams. He wants to, be great at business, have the best house in the best neighborhood. And, the American dream, as we all understand it. But, you know, when you look into his background, he was actually an orphan who was kind of smuggled out of East Germany from behind the Iron Curtain back during the Cold War. And so he's always had this nagging wonder as to where he came from, what his real background is. And there's a business opportunity that allows him to travel to Germany. As he goes in, he starts to dig into his past a little bit more and really uncovers some pretty shocking information about his family and where he came from. And it really ties back into World War II, as you were mentioning, about half the book takes place back in that period. And it all ties back into his life and this conspiracy that kind of started back then in Nazi Germany and is still going on kind of out of view in this day, and it all has to do with the rocketry program and everything else. But, it builds to a pretty thrilling race against time, I like to think, and, some surprises that I wouldn't want to ruin.
It's a fantastic page turn. The book is called Seeing by Moonlight, and you can find out more about it online at seeingbymoonlight.com. And I will tell you that if you go to that website, you'll see that the book has received just a ton of critical acclaim, from everyone from Kirkus to Indie Book Review. And when you guys were writing this book, did you have any sense that it was going to turn out to be as well received as it is?
Well, I mean, you always hope to do as good a job as you can. And, it's hard to say. I mean, neither of us had published a novel before. And, I've written in a number of other media and, have been very proud of the work that I've done. But anytime you're venturing into new territory, it's hard to know, especially when you only have kind of your own opinions as your guide. I mean, you can pass it back and forth and say, I don't know, does this sound good? And, but we were very excited as we were trucking along, and especially as we got into the back half of the book and the momentum really starts picking up with the thrills and the story, it started to feel real exciting that I would say, like, wow, this is a book I would enjoy reading, and I hope people enjoy reading it too. But to the extent to which the critics have been acclaiming it, I mean, it caught even us off guard. I mean, it was beyond our hopes to be this well-received with our first book.
We're talking with Nicholas Turketel. He is the co-author of Seeing by Moonlight with M.F. Thomas, and some of those reviews are just unbelievable. 5 out of 5 stars from Reader's Favorite. They say the writing team is extraordinarily gifted. Their style is smooth and lyrical. Characters are finely drawn. Kirkus calls it a complex thriller that offers new revelations up in the very end. An Indie Reader, 4.5 stars. Seeing by Moonlight is a thoughtful and intricate story with enough food for thought to keep the reader's brain and heart engaged from beginning to end. You know, there are fans of historical fiction, and lots of movies and books, you know, are made, lots of creative work. But this has a different twist because of the rocketry piece, and there's sort of this melding of science fiction and rocketry. And I'd like to know sort of where the germ of the idea came from between you and Mr. Thomas.
Well, Mr. Thomas often, if you know, to dig a little bit into how our partnership functions, he often will bring kind of the initial idea to the table or the initial subject that he's, you know, become really fascinated with. And he's great about compiling research and kind of bringing a lot of stuff together. And he sent me all these books, and, you know, some of them are straight-up history. Some of them are much more speculative. But, you know, when you really dig into the German rocketry program, not only in World War II, but in the years leading up to it, I mean, it's fascinating stuff. And some of it sounds outright like science fiction until you dig into it and say, no, this was science fact. I mean, they were talking about putting people on the moon in the 1930s and the 1940s. They already had the designs on paper. And so that was what interested him, that there was this relationship between what they were speculating and imagining on and what America would end up doing just a couple of decades later. And a lot of the same personnel are involved. I mean, you talk about Wernher von Braun. He pops up in the book as this character who, you know, starts off in Germany as part of this secret program and then, you know, ends up being brought into the United States. And our space program, which, you know, we'll end up talking about more as we get into the Virgin Galactic disaster of this past week, but that's a direct outgrowth of that German rocketry program from World War II. So, you know, Mr. Thomas travels a lot, and there's a chapter in the book that takes place in these tunnels below a secret rocket base in Peenemünde, and that's a real place. I mean, he sent me pictures and video from walking through those tunnels, and it is every bit as eerie and ghostly as we tried to capture in the book. That this was this a whole secret base where these rockets were being constructed. There was one that was called the America rocket, and its whole function was to be launched from Germany and land in the United States. And some of these things were going to be piloted by people. Which is pretty crazy if you imagine a rocket piloted by a person traveling 2,000 miles across the ocean. So that was what really wow. hooked us in when we thought, my God, this sounds like science fiction already. And then you layer a few imaginings on top of that, and you've suddenly got something very exciting.
The book we're talking about is Seeing by Moonlight, and it's available at Amazon.com, online retailers everywhere. And Seeing by Moonlight is co-authored by Nicholas Thurkettle, our guest today, and M.F. Thomas. And Nicholas is also the author of a short story collection and Stages of Sleep. He is a theater guy as well. He's got a degree in theater performance and music at Bradley, and a member of the Writers Guild of America and the Orange County Playwrights Alliance. Something I learned in this book as I read it, and I didn't read it, Nicholas, to learn things. I read it because it was fun to read. But something that I did learn that I thought was fascinating, and I guess it never really occurred to me, is that, you know, in World War II, there were, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of scientists who were working directly for the Third Reich, for the Nazis. And at the end of World War II, when Germany fell, America and the Soviet Union sort of did this plundering of the great minds of Germany and brought them to America and to the Soviet Union. And that was really, in many ways, the launch of the great space race, where all these fantastic German scientists who wound up by hook or crook in America or the Soviet Union.
Well, you're right, and by hook or crook is absolutely right. I mean, we weren't always gentle when it came to persuading the German scientists to come over to our side. And, you know, it is sort of ominous when you think that even as the battlefields were cooling from World War II, you know, the Cold War lines were already being drawn, and this was kind of one of the first battlefronts, is who would get the most benefit of that brain power. And yeah, you know, it turned out, I can't remember who it was that said that our Germans were better than their Germans, and that ended up being determinative when it came to the space race. But yeah, there were thousands of these scientists that got approached by our side and their side. On our side, it was called Operation Paperclip, and the OSS and then CIA was running that operation. And yeah, it's fascinating history, and you could write many thrilling books just digging into that area of history.
And by the way, if this sounds interesting to you, you can read the first chapter. I believe it's posted for free on singbymoonlight.com. And you can find out more about the authors, M.F. Thomas, and our guest today, Nicholas Thirkettle. And the book is set both at the end of the 90s in 1999 with this guy, Alex Pike, who owns a small car lot in Scottsdale, Arizona, and he basically is trying to, you know, fatten up his bank account. And he's a single guy, and he's sort of playing the ladies and living on the golf course. And he has an opportunity to go overseas and pick up a car or two for a wealthy car lot client, and they get swept into this incredible series of events. When you read this book, at least to me, Nicholas, it reads like a movie. And I wonder, as you were writing this with M.F. Thomas, did you visualize it like a movie? And if so, you know, are there characters? Is there an actor that you visualize to play this lead character, Alex Pike, for example?
I don't know if I have a specific actor in mind, but I will say that, you know, the bulk of my own writing experience when I'm writing on my own is in screenwriting, and I've worked in the film business for a number of years. And so I think cinematic storytelling is always kind of ingrained in my approach, in that you're thinking about dynamic visuals, you're thinking about, you know, kind of that really fast narrative pace of mainstream thrillers and the films that you love to see, where you're really just, you know, turning over these amazing events, you know, just minute by minute. And I think that really did inform the process of writing the book and shaping the story. You know, when it comes to who might play him, I mean, you know, Alex Pike is kind of a very classic leading man. You know, you've got someone who would be, you know, charming and popular, and, you know, roughly in that, you know, 30s or 40s age range that a lot of leading men seem to occupy, but with room to grow. You know, it's funny, a good friend of mine read the book, and the first thing she said to me after it was done was, "I really didn't like this guy at first." She's just like, he's just like everything that I don't like. But then when he goes on this journey and he really learns more about himself and he discovers kind of a higher purpose, and you see sort of new qualities in him open up. And that's I think, what we really want to see in the heroes of these stories, right? Is that they have one goal at first, but then they realize there's a little bit more to life than as you say, the golf course and the girls on Friday night.
And as a guy who spends a lot of time in the movie business and has done his fair share of screenwriting and playwriting, it's a long, difficult process, I know, to go from the pages of a book to a movie. If there are authors or there are writers out there who think, geez, you know, I'd love to have my book made into a movie, talk a little bit about that process and what's involved, and is there a possibility of Singing by Moonlight that it may wind up on the silver screen one day?
You know, it's funny. I don't know how I would pull it off. And it's funny that I've written any number of screenplays, and yet I haven't sort of allowed myself to really think about how I would crack that yet. I mean, it starts off with a sort of that prologue that you mentioned can be read for free on the book's website. I mean, that's a classic, what we call in the business, a cold open, where you jump right into a really mysterious and strange situation that grabs your attention right from the get-go. And that was one of the first things that Mr. Thomas had sketched out and sent to me. And I, you know, even I was like, oh yeah, I want to know where this goes next. I want to know what's happening. You know, this crazy sequence of a ghost in the Oval Office and, you know, FDR and, you know, and everything else. And, you know, there's been a historical kind of ongoing conversation about adaptation of books and what works better. And books are really, really difficult when it comes to screenwriting, because when you really break it down, the amount of content you can put into a book, the amount of character detail and setting detail and history, when you try and turn it into a, you know, 120-page script or two-hour movie, you suddenly realize just how difficult it is and just how different the media are in terms of how we absorb information. A lot of people are of the mind that a short story is actually better to adapt into a movie than a novel, just because you can borrow some of that narrative energy, and if you have to fill in gaps, you fill them. But that books are notoriously tough to condense.
A lot of shaving that has to go on, and a book like this, I guess, frankly, would be a pretty expensive movie to make because of all the science fiction and the history set pieces and all that, and I'm sure that figures into it. And I have to ask you an interesting question, too. You know, we sort of danced around and talked about M.F. Thomas, your co-author. He's sort of an interesting, secretive, mysterious guy. I mean, here's a guy who has lived and worked in a couple of dozen countries and has actually seen a lot of this this science firsthand, and it has done this exploring. But you guys have a very unique writing connection in that you didn't sit in a writer's room together. He wants to be sort of very quiet and kept out of the limelight, and you did all of this essentially electronically. Talk to me a little about that process and sort of your mysterious co-op.
Well, yeah, what to say about Mr. Thomas? I mean, you know, he's a fascinating guy and a fun guy to know. And we've known each other for about 5 years now. And we met online. He was searching around for a collaborator. And, you know, I've done a lot of freelance work and ghostwriting work. And usually when you pick up a partner, it's under a kind of classic ghostwriting arrangement where you come in, do your bit, be as invisible as possible. And, you know, it's really their work overall, but he was really seeking something different, that he wanted a true partner to kind of, you know, get the best of both worlds. And the truth is, in all that 5 years, we've only met in person twice. And it happens to be, you know, when his travel schedule coincides with being in Los Angeles, we sat down and had coffee once as kind of an initial get to know you. And then a few months later, as we were kind of finalizing the outline for Seen by Moonlight and about to kick off. But since then, everything we've done, and that includes both Seen by Moonlight and the new book that we're working on now, A Sickness in Time, it's all been done by email and by phone. And it's funny because there'll be times that I've kind of polished off a chapter and I'll send it off to him and I'll say, you know, hey, what do you think about this? And I won't hear from him for a week or so because he's off in Shanghai doing something or whatever. But it's always fun when he checks in, because he'll send me some article about, you know, brain implants or something and be like, oh, this is fascinating. How can we work this in? And suddenly there's a whole new avenue of research to kind of move down. But it's a lot of fun, and it's worked out well for both of us.
The mysterious M.F. Thomas is the co-author of Seeing by Moonlight with our guest, Nicholas Thurkettle. And the book is available online at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. And it's just a fantastic rip-roaring read of historical fiction. And when we come back, life imitates art, or in this case, maybe art imitates life. This is a book that has to do with the rocketry program, space program, which has seen better days in the last week. A couple of major space mishaps. We're going to talk about Virgin Galactic and the Antares right after this on the Burke Allen Show. Hang on.
Over 14 million people witnessed his emotional story of survival and triumph on national television.
I've been doing this now for so long, like ever since I was a kid.
Millions more voted him their favorite in a landslide win.
The winner is...
And now, you can be a part of the experience live.
Landau Eugene Murphy!
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.
Ain't that a kick in the head?
Your America's Got Talent winner.
I've got you.
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.
Under my
Live. Performing classics from the Great American Songbook and his Columbia Records debut CD, That's Life.
That's Life.
Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.'s That's Life Tour. The one concert event this year you absolutely can't miss.
See Landau Eugene Murphy Jr. live in concert. For a complete list of concert details, log on to LandauMurphyJr.com. Like that anymore. Well, maybe that's not the case. The book Seeing by Moonlight is a well-written, well-crafted historical fiction thriller, and it's getting all sorts of great reviews and reader feedback. And you can find out more about Seeing by Moonlight and read the first chapter online at seeingbymoonlight.com. The co-author, Nicholas Thurkettle, joins us on the Burke Allen Show. And if you'd like to be a part of the conversation, our number is 718-506-1944. So you write this book some time back, Nicholas, and then suddenly in the last week, there's an awful lot of talk in the media about what's going on in the rocketry program. First, an Antares rocket explodes 6 seconds after liftoff in Virginia with stuff inbound, supplies and such for the International Space Station. That one is unmanned. And then 3 days later, a Virgin Galactic suborbital spacecraft crashes, and there's a fatality there. What is your take? Because you obviously have done hundreds of hours of research in the rocketing program, but, you know, what has caused these two things to happen back to back?
Well, you know, you're right. And when you do the research to get to know a topic in order to write a book about it, you do end up sort of having an ongoing interest in it through your life. And, of course, I've always been a space geek. And then, you know, to see what happens, to see this coming over the news, I mean, it's really shocking. And to have two things happen so close together is, it's a horrible coincidence. But at the same time, it combines to push something into the public consciousness and really give us pause. Now, as you said, we're talking about, you know, two different accidents, two different companies, and really two entirely different scenarios as to what happened. I mean, you know, the Antares rocket at first, you know, we mentioned from Seeing by Moonlight, that post-war period when the German scientists were kind of being divided as spoils of war amongst the Americans and the Soviets. The Antares rocket was actually powered by an old Soviet engine. It was called the NK-33, and it was designed to take Soviet cosmonauts to the moon. I mean, they had their own kind of plans in the works that never came to fruition, but this was the engine that they designed and built a whole bunch of in order to prepare for this mission. And they just ended up in storage. And this company, Orbital Sciences, that has this contract from NASA to, as you say, resupply the space station, they were repurposing these engines. And because they were the product, I mean, anyone who's in research can tell you about it being the product of an entirely different sort of research tree. It was very, very foreign technologies in them, and they were relying on outside contractors from their Ukraine and elsewhere to help them kind of adapt these engines. And, you know, the story is still unfolding in terms of what exactly happened to make that mission fail and force them to destroy the rocket, which is what they did. They actually triggered a self-destruct on it. But a lot of the speculation has had to do with the fact that they were using these engines that were designed by an entirely different school of thought for an entirely different purpose and just may not have functioned the way that they were hoped to.
Nicholas, I had actually read somewhere that you know, that technology that powered that rocket, then in fact, it says it was over 50 years old and was designed, as you said, for something completely different. And I guess that leads to the question about sort of this privatization of the space race, where you have companies like Virgin Galactic and this company in Virginia that repurposed that Soviet technology, doing this instead of NASA. And NASA, of course, is sort of a shell of what it once was. Well, what's your take based on all the research you've done about the privatization of the space program? Is this a good thing, or based on these two accidents, is it a bad thing?
Well, I think overall it's a really, really positive thing. And the perspective that I take on it is this. A lot of the reason why there was the money and the governmental backing to develop these technologies in the first place was for the purposes of war. I mean, these were rockets that were designed to go up into the air, come down on a populated area, and kill a lot of people. And it's ominous when you think about it. I mean, and you and I both remember the Cold War and those fears that you grew up with about what might happen. And now, you know, as it turned into the space race, and there started to become a purpose of exploration behind it, and a purpose of something that seemed to be, you know, one giant leap for mankind, that we were actually doing something that could be really positive for the human race. And there were still a lot of Cold War fears driving the space race, but something new had emerged. And where I think we're at now is you're starting to see these private companies that are stepping in, and of course they've got their eye on a long-term profit motive, you know, in terms of ways to really make money off of space. But to me, it's such a greater purpose, and it's a much more optimistic thing to have us doing things like trying to just take people up into space for the sheer wonder of it, which is what, you know, Richard Branson is trying to do with Spaceship Two and Virgin Galactic, that we really started from when these things first appeared on someone's drawing board. It was to kill people. So in that regard, I'm very, very optimistic about the transition.
Well, and it certainly seems as if right now, from an outsider's viewpoint, NASA is somewhat rudderless. They don't have you know, that big end goal. In the 60s, of course, Kennedy said, you know, in the early 60s, you know, this decade we're going to put a man on the moon. And everyone sort of shored up around that one comic goal. And, you know, by crackies, they got it done by 1969. Now there doesn't seem to be a big goal in NASA. And perhaps these private companies like Virgin Galactic can you know, provide some direction there. And what have you learned, if anything, about what happened with the Virgin Galactic accident, and you know, what steps will Richard Branson and his team take to make sure it doesn't happen again?
Well, you know, obviously now you have a more serious case with Virgin Galactic because there has been a fatality involved, which always makes people kind of pause for a moment and reflect. But the space race has many stories like this. I mean, you know, it's not even the first fatality that the Virgin Galactic suffered. I mean, they had an accident at the same Mojave test facility in 2007 with an explosion that took the lives of four people. So it is more serious. What, you know, we're learning right now, and the NTSB is on the ground, and they are, you know, incredibly meticulous by reputation. So it is going to be many, many months while they kind of collect every single piece of this ship and reconstruct what happened in the final seconds. They have an operating theory that they've shared, which is by no means for sure, but this was not an explosion. I mean, there had been early speculation about this new fuel mixture they were using. They were testing out a new sort of plastic-based fuel because the previous fuel they were using wasn't sort of meeting their goals. And so that immediately, there was a spotlight on that as to a possible cause for the accident. But they did recover both the engine and the fuel tanks intact. So they know that it wasn't an explosion. What we had was the craft literally being sort of torn apart up there. And their theory is the way this ship, Spaceship Two, is designed, in order to save fuel on the way down and save weight, it will change shape on descent. It's what they call feathering, and it'll turn itself into a glider to gently return to Earth. And it sounds as if what they're focusing on is that it appears part of that tail section involved in that feathering maneuver started to deploy while the ship was still ascending and accelerating, which is catastrophic, as I'm sure you can imagine. So there are a lot of questions as to how that happened, because it's not a simple question of, you know, someone pushing the wrong button. They deliberately design it, so it's not that simple to do something that dangerous. So there's going to be a lot of focus on that in the months ahead as to how that may have occurred and whether that was what set this whole process in motion.
When these news stories hit, and you're a guy who's written this book, you know, some months ago or maybe years ago, does it give you pause? Do you think, geez, you know, how could this be happening? Something that I wrote about it in sort of fictional terms, and now it's forefront in the news. What does that make you think?
Well, you know, there's a number that I keep in my head, and it's just over 5,000, and that's the number of manned or unmanned launches that we as the human race have conducted since Sputnik in 1957. And when you think over 5,000, you can think to yourself either, gee, that sounds like a lot, you know, or gee, like that's less than half the number of planes we put in the air every day on Earth. So, you know, from one perspective, we've done a lot of this, but from another perspective, this is all very, very new, and every time you send something up, there's an element of experiment and risk. And historically, out of that 5,000 that I told you about, we've had about 450 failures. So that's about 9% of the time something goes wrong, which, you know, is an incredible element of danger. I mean, would you get in your car if you knew that 9% of the time some accident was going to happen? And obviously, a lot of those accidents are front-loaded, and the early years of the program, our record has gotten much, much, much better in those regards. But it is a risk every time. And the guys who do this test pilot who passed away, Michael Alsbury, I mean, there's an incredible amount of risk involved every time they go up.
We're talking with Nicholas Thurkettle, the co-author of the new thrilling historical fiction novel, Seeing by Moonlight. It's available online at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. And you can also check out a free first chapter at SeeingByMoonlight.com. Nicholas, I appreciate your insight into what happened with Virgin Galactic and the Antares. And best of luck with the book. And please give M.F. Thomas our best, too. It's a great read.
I'll do as soon as I can get word to him, Burke. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Nicholas Thurkettle, our guest today on the Burke Allen Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. The book is Seeing by Moonlight, and it's a wonderful rip-roaring read, a crackling yarn, as they used to say back in the day. Thanks for listening wherever you are. Go out and make it a great day. Bye, everybody.